Hi, this is your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. This is just a little pre-episode note because I want to apologize. I must have been still hungover from the con or tireder than I thought. In the recording, in the second half, like the end of the second hour or so of the recording, I mentioned that if you want to get the show notes for that episode where I talk about TotalCon 27, which took place in February of 2013, say the show notes for this are, and I give you a wrong web address. The show notes are at wargamingforums.com/WR87. That's right, wargamingforums.com/WR87. I give you the wrong one in the show itself. Ignore that. The only one that you want is wargamingforums.com/WR87. That'll let you see the show notes, get to all the links, allow you to post a comment to get in touch with me. All that kind of stuff. Please ignore all the other ones and please accept my most sincere apologies. Like I said, I must have still been, heavily hungover or something from the convention, or I was just too tired or something. But whatever the case was, I made an error and I am deeply sorry for it. I hope you don't go to the wrong show notes. In case you do, I'll have a little note at the top of the wrong show note web address, but the correct one last time is wargamingforums.com/WR87. My apologies one more time, and I hope you enjoy episode 87 of Wargaming Recon. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com. This podcast is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where satisfaction is guaranteed. Since 1997, Noble Knight Games has been serving gamers' needs globally. They stock over 100,000 new and out-of-print board games, role-playing games, CCGs, minis, and war games. They have it all. Noble Knight Games always deliver what they promise. Speedy shipping coupled with excellent and friendly customer service make shopping here a no-brainer. You'll find discounted pricing on most imprint games and reasonable prices on out-of-print and rare items. With over 15 years in the business, they know how to package your order so it arrives safely anywhere in the world. Want to transform your old games into that new item you've had your eye on? Check out their trading and selling your games section. They provide the shipping labels, you box up your games, and that's it. Don't forget to sign up for their weekly email newsletter where you can discover new and rare finds. Visit them online at NobleKnight.com. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 88, Save the Higgins Armory. Before we get into everything, I just want to let you know we have a lot of stuff that I'm going to talk about in today's episode, but I want to just dive right in and start talking about the Higgins Armory. For those of you who don't know, the Higgins Armory is located in Worcester, Massachusetts, and it's been around for a very, very, very long time. It is perhaps the second largest collection of arms and armor outside of the Metropolitan Museum in New York City. It has a collection of medieval armor and weaponry throughout the ages, second to none. There are countries all across the world who would kill to have a collection like the Higgins does. And the Higgins, for many, many years, has been located in its beautiful Art Deco building and been open to the public and welcoming for school children and everyone, really, who has an interest in learning about any of this kind of stuff to come and see real pieces firsthand, learn how armor works, learn how to use these weapons, to feel and pick them up. Interactive exhibits and a wonderful staff to teach and explain and get you excited about this type of military history. Unfortunately, it was recently announced that at the end of 2013 that the Higgins Armory will be closing. That's right, December 31st, 2013, the Higgins Armory will be closing. And the reason for this is that there is insufficient funds to keep the Higgins going. They say that it has an annual operating deficit of between $350,000 and $400,000. That's right, per year. Almost $500,000 a year. It has a small endowment, and when it was first put into place and founded by Mr. Higgins, he had a very modest endowment at that time, and it has grown a little bit. What they feel they really need in order for it to continue is an endowment of $15 million. They've tried all sorts of different things to attempt to get an endowment in order to keep them operating, allow them to keep the building, to keep their collection and the staff. And they've cited a primary reason for these massive expenses is the building itself that they housed in, that the museum's housed in. It's this wonderful Art Deco building in Worcester, but it's not the easiest building to maintain, to heat, to deal with all sorts of utilities and just regular maintenance kind of stuff. That there are areas throughout the building. One section will be a hot spot, another will be a cold spot. How do you regulate that? How do you fund having those types of heating bills and those AC bills and all that kind of stuff? Because of this, they just can't keep up with this deficit. And try as they might, they have come up with no solutions to allow the armory to stay open. And because of that, they will be closing, like I said, on December 31st, 2013. Now, there is hope. The hope comes in the form of you and me and everyone who cares about the Higgins, who cares about this type of interactive learning and this ability to encourage our kids and school children and people like you and me to get interested in history and in military history, to get first-hand experience. But they need money is what they need. So they are just, they've given up is really what it is. And I know I sound a little speechless here. The reason for that is I'm flabbergasted. I've never been to the Higgins. I've heard of the Higgins and I've heard how wonderful it is. And I've always thought it would be fantastic to go and to walk around, see the exhibits. And there will come a time when the museum will be shut. And supposedly, you will still be able to access the core exhibits. About 200 of them is what I had read. Because they are going to be put into, I believe, the Worcester Art Museum. And the Worcester Art Museum is trying to find enough space for them to have a permanent exhibit composed of the collection from the Higgins. Now, whether or not that's going to be true is beyond me, but they're hoping to find space for the core collection of 2,000 objects from the Higgins. And even though that might be true, and maybe you'll still be able to go to the Worcester Art Museum and see all this stuff, the staff will not be coming with it. At least not all of the staff. These people are experts. They worked there for years. They know about all of this equipment, all their collections and their artifacts. They know what works and how to succeed to get people interested in this type of history. There is going to be a meeting in March 24th, I believe, 2013. Around then, there's going to be a meeting of the board of directors when the official vote will be taken, in which they'll say, okay, that's it. We're going to stay open for the rest of 2013, and then we're shutting our doors. You can still go now, and you can view the exhibits, and you can see the collections, but if that vote goes the way that it looks like it's going to go, then the entire collection from the Higgins will be moved and will be taken up as owned by the Worcester Art Museum, and hopefully the collection will find a permanent home there at the Worcester Art Museum. Unfortunately, the museum staff of the Higgins may not be able to go with them. There's 9 full-time staff members and 19 part-time staff members. The director, executive director rather, Susan W. Maz, has said that she will be resigning as soon as things are all set, and that's that. She's going to just step down and walk away. That she feels and knows from everyone she's talked to and all the experts that there's no way they can earn their way out of their $350,000 to $400,000 annual operating deficit. That what they really needed was an endowment that was much larger, Their endowment was 2.9 million, I believe, and that they kept on taking money out of it and money out of it and money out of it, and were never able to put money back into it, never able to grow that endowment to secure a long-term future. For people who've been to the Higgins, who grew up going there, school children in the area, for people who are adults who love the Higgins, it's a very, very sad day for them. Unfortunately, the executive director has said that, quote, the bottom line is there is not enough endowment for them to be sustainable, end quote. And that's what it is. But hopefully, some sort of public pressure and fundraising can allow the Higgins to continue. That's a hope. Whether or not that's a reality, I can't tell you. But what I can tell you is there is a Facebook group dedicated to saving the Higgins. It's called Save the Higgins. There's over 1,890 people are fans of the page who follow it. Tons and tons of people are trying to come up with ideas to help them either crowdfund or raise the money somehow to keep the Higgins open past December 31st. And the only way to really keep the Higgins open, as I said, is they need that money. So, with that in mind, we're not able to give them $15 million to keep them open. But hopefully, by raising awareness, we can get you, our fellow listeners, and our friends to spread the word and try to get your thinking caps on and see what you can do. I actually have a note here, a little bit of a letter from a listener, Adam of the Fencing Frog blog, and we'll have a link, of course, to his blog in the show notes. He wrote in, and I told Adam, I was like, Adam, you know you care about the Higgins a lot, and I'm going to talk about it on the show. Anything you want to share about it? And since he is so passionate about it, I figure what he has to say, what he wrote in, will speak volumes more than what I myself has said, whereas I've never been, and I've heard of it, and I've read about the Higgins, and read articles about what's going on now, and seen the pictures, and seen how much it matters to people. But someone who has been there and loves it as much as Adam with his passion, I know that is just going to speak so much louder than anything I could say. So, Adam has said that, quote, the collection at the Higgins Armory is unique both in its content and its presentation. While it is true the contents will still be available at the Worcester Museum of Art, I cannot believe that presentation will be preserved. The staff at the Higgins not only know their subject as scholars, but they have an intimate understanding as historic martial artists who cannot just tell you how a suit of armor worked, but show you how you have to attack it. He says, I would love to save Higgins. I have emailed them and asked them how I can help. So far, I and many others who have asked this on Facebook have gone unanswered. It may be too late. If that is the case, then shame on the administrators of the museum for not calling out to the public for aid. Many a treasure has been saved by a pennies campaign or similar fundraiser, and with the reach of the web and social network support, need not be local or expensive to solicit. To the public at large, Adam says, go to the Higgins Museum and enjoy it while you can. When you are there, tell them you want it to remain open. He says, I am sure the Worcester Museum of Art will do the best job it can with the collection, but it will be a pale, ghostly reflection of Higgins. And I know from the little bits that I've seen here and there online, many, many people say that not only is the collection amazing, but the fact that the collection is in the Higgins Museum, in that building, it makes a difference. That atmosphere, it changes things. It makes it more tangible, makes it better. And with it moving to the Worcester Art Museum, I'm not saying that you will have a bad experience or that you won't be able to access the collection there, but it won't be the same. And hopefully, the Higgins can be saved, but it needs your help. So the way to do it is to get in touch with them. And we're going to have a link in our show notes to a newspaper article you can read about this, to the Save the Higgins Facebook page, to the Higgins website, all things Higgins, so you can go and you can find out what you need to do and find out what's going on, so you can get in touch with them and see what you can do to help. Speaking of our show notes, you want to know how to get to them, don't you? So you need to head on over to wargamingforums.com/WR88. That's right, wargamingforums.com/WR88. And that'll have links to everything we talk about here in this episode. It'll have all our show notes and all sorts of cool content. It's also a really great way for you to get in touch with us here at Wargaming Recon. There are many ways you can reach us. You can send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. You can go ahead and leave a message on our Facebook page. Easy way to get to that is wargamingforums.com/Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We're on Google+. You can call us and leave a voicemail at 347-470-GAME. That's right, 347-470-4263. Or, since you're going to be at the show notes anyway, looking up all those links, you can leave a comment on the show notes page. Just go to that link we gave you, wargamingforums.com/WR88. See all the cool links on there, and then post a comment. We read them all, we'll reply, everything. It'll be a lot of fun and be a chance for you to get in touch with us. Tell us what you think about this here at Wargaming Recon. So that's what I have to say about saving the Higgins. And I really hope the Higgins lasts. Like I said, I've never been and I want to go. I have less than a year to get there. And if things don't change and the Higgins goes the way of the dodo, I want to be able to say, you know what? I've been to the Higgins. I've experienced the Higgins. And yeah, I could go down the road and see the cool and amazing collection at the Worcester Art Museum, but I'm told it just won't be the same. So take your chance now while you can and get yourself to the Higgins right over in Worcester, Massachusetts. It's worth a trip. You gotta do it. And just go ahead and act now. So that is what we have to say about the Higgins Armory, and I hope that it'll get saved. Now I want to move on, and this is kind of a medley of topics. I know the show's episode name is Save the Higgins Armory, because that's what I wanted to kick off with and get you excited about and hopefully get you to go to the Higgins and take some action. But I have some other stuff I want to talk about. So the next topic I want to cover is International Tabletop Day. It is on March 30th, 2013, and this is being done by the people over at Geeks and Sundry and Tabletop and all that kind of stuff. Yes, Mr. Will Wheaton is doing this, and it's an international day for you to get together with friends and strangers and gamers of all shapes and sizes at your home, at your school auditorium, coffee houses, and at your friendly local game store and play games. I know that a lot of places are participating in this and going to be running demos and having all sorts of cool stuff for you to go do and play. Chance for you to just get out of the house and have some fun. It's going to be really cool. You can find out what places near you will be hosting by heading on over to tabletopday.com. And you just put in your zip code or your address and it'll tell you what's nearby. If no place nearby is doing something, why don't you host one yourself? Even if it's just going to be a private event for you and some of your buddies at your house or one of their houses, put something together and have a good time. Just go and play some tabletop games. Near me, there's going to be two really cool events happening. Battleground Games and Hobbies in Abington is doing an all-day tabletop celebration throughout the day from like 10 in the morning till 11 at night or thereabouts. Be able to go. There's going to be all sorts of different games being demoed. You can play games, hang out with people, get tips and tricks, and just have a blast. Tons and tons of different types of things happening all day at their brand new store in Abington. That's right, because they moved not too long ago. I think it was back in end of December of 2012. They moved into a brand new location, which is going to be fantastic. I've actually never been to the new location yet, and I'm looking forward to going, and I'm really hoping to get there for Tabletop Day. So you want to head on over to 1423 Bedford Street in Abington, Massachusetts, or give a phone call to 781-261-9669. Get in touch with the staff there at Battleground Games and Hobbies. see what's going on. Maybe there's a game you want to demo. Get in touch and they'll find some space. Get the word out. It's going to be a great time to play some awesome games. I know that they're also going to be doing it at their other location, Battleground Games and Hobbies in Plainville. They're doing it in the evening from 7:45 until 11 o'clock. Head on over to Plainville's location, which is 25 Taunton Street in Plainville, Massachusetts. Going to be all sorts of games. Now, I'm really hoping to get to the Abington store for this because it's going to be all day long. Plus, I've never been to the Abington store, the new Abington store. But it's more likely that I'll end up at the Plainville store because that's a little closer to me or a little more accessible, really. It takes me less time to get there. Either way, I'm hoping to get to at least one of these, hang out, play some games. I'm really looking forward to playing the game X-Wing, the brand new game, my Final Flight. No, that's not right. Fantasy Flight. Yes, Fantasy Flight game. Sorry. Had to do a little thinking right there. And I'm really looking forward to playing that, but it's going to be a blast. Like I said, this is happening all over the place. No matter where you are in the world, chances are there's going to be some sort of tabletop event happening near you, and all you have to do is head on over to tabletopday.com and see what's going on. And they actually have some really cool stuff there that you can use. They have some graphics you can take, make posters out of them, make signs, put them on your blog, on your Facebook page, on your Twitter, whatever, to promote that you are going to or are running a Tabletop Day event. It's going to be awesome, and I hope you participate in this. I hope this becomes an annual tradition, just like Free Comic Book Day, which is a day I love. Chance to go and get some free comics and see what's going on. Get in touch with some cool comic book type of activities. And I'm hoping that International Tabletop Day takes off. And I think it will. I think it has the support. I think it has the chance that it can go and blossom and keep on keeping on. Like I said, I am planning to be there. Won't be running anything. Just don't have the time right now. Still recuperating, actually, from TotalCon, believe it or not. But the hope is that I'll get there and play some cool games. I know some of my buddies are going to be at the different locations. Like I said, chances are stores near you or other locations near you are going to be running stuff. So I really do hope you get a chance to go out and play some cool games. And it's not just going to be like board games or not just mini games. It's going to be a conglomeration of different kind of things. The best way to find out about it is to go to the Tabletop Day website, see what's going on near you, get in touch with the locations, the stores, or whatever, and ask them questions. What are you doing? What's your plans? Or you open for me to run an event or whatever? And just get involved and see what's going on. It's going to be, I think, a lot of fun. And it's going to be a blast. Great chance to get out and play some tabletop games. So like I said, that's happening on March 30th, which is a Saturday. Great chance to do that. So I hope that I'll be able to see some of you local people there. I know quite a few of the listeners are local, such as, oh, I don't know, Adrian, and I know Patrick is, and there's too many of you really to list all of you, but I know quite a few of you are local people, so hopefully they'll be able to see at least some of you at some of these events. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit and move away from cajoling you with a call to action to save the Higgins and move away from saying, let's go play some fun games. I want to talk about, it's kind of a review, but kind of just me musing about this really cool book that I came across. It's not a new book. It's been around for a while. And it's really, really cool. I honestly wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it at first. The book is titled Solo Wargaming. It's by Mr. Donald Featherstone. He, yes, is the great of old school gaming, old school wargaming. And he wrote this, oh Jesus, back in the 70s, was it? I think it was back in the 70s, and I could look it up, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and say he wrote it back early 70s, maybe 72, 73, 71, somewhere around there. I have to be right? I listened to most of the early 70s. But what this book is, it tells you not only why you should, but how to solo wargame. So let me explain solo wargaming. Most people think of wargaming, it's you and a buddy get together, you have a table between you, your troops and toy soldiers on one side, their troops and toy soldiers on the other side, you roll some dice, you have a rule set that you use, you move stuff around on the table, you go whack, 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 shoot, 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 stab, throw arrows, or whatever, depending on your time period. Someone wins, someone loses, or there's a draw. Afterwards, you go hang out in a pub or somewhere, you have a few beers to drink or something, you talk about the game, and you plan to get together again some other time to play another game. It's a lot of fun. It's how I've always done any sort of miniatures gaming, whether it's been wargaming, whether it's been sci-fi or fantasy, whatever. It's always been me and someone else playing a game. Because how can you play a game by yourself? You know what you're doing on both sides, and how can you do that? There's no fun in that. You need to have an opponent. If you don't have an opponent, well, you're out of luck is what it is. That's not so true. In solo wargaming, Donald Featherstone explains that there's a lot of benefits to solo wargaming, and there's a lot of ways you can solo wargame so that it's not just you saying, I like Army A better than Army B, so I'm going to make sure Army A wins no matter what. In fact, a good chunk of the book explains how to avoid that, which is it's actually really important, because otherwise it's going to always be boring, and you're never going to have to do anything other than sit in your chair and think, okay, I have Force 1 and Force 2. I like Force 2 better today. Oh, look, Force 2 won. And you didn't really have to do anything. You just said that. That's not wargaming. That's not anything, really. That's just you sitting there going, I think this will happen. Okay, that happened. That's stupid, actually, is what that is. So, the book, let me back up a second. He gives some reasons to solo wargame. I wish I could say, oh, he gives 5 reasons to solo wargame. He actually gives many, many reasons in which you should solo wargame. But I've distilled them down to, 6 or so. One of the biggest reasons for solo wargaming is that wargaming solo, I'm trying to think of other ways I can phrase this, but playing tabletop games like this by yourself really lends itself to campaigns. And who doesn't love the idea of doing a campaign? I mean, any long-term listeners know that I've talked about before the Deadhampton Revolution, which is my imagination campaign based on the American Revolution, or for our friends across the pond, the War of American Independence, and know that I'm really excited about that. And who wouldn't love the idea of having something like that, or whether it's you're doing some World War II gaming and you really want to see how you fare in a fight against the Japanese as the Americans, or maybe you love ancient Rome and you want to see how they do in the Punic Wars, and you just want to have this grand campaign, or maybe, you know, you're not doing historical wargaming, maybe you're doing sci-fi or fantasy, you really want to see what happens in Lord of the Rings, maybe you love to be evil, and maybe you want Saruman to go, and you want to have a campaign where you play as Saruman, or maybe you're really into like Warhammer 40k and you want to do a cool 40k campaign. You could rely on having other people in the campaign and hope that their schedules mean that they actually will show up when they say they will show up, and that you'll get the games in, and that you won't have to worry about people not showing up, which would mean you wouldn't have an opponent, which would mean you can't play, which would mean you're going to be set back another week, or you might have to set up a separate day outside of regular game night to go and play a game with that person, which means you're going to have to move the rest of your schedule around and this and that, and then, oh look, domino effect, and 40 minutes later, you realize your schedule's too packed and you can't come up with another day, and it's all ruined because so-and-so didn't come on game night. Well, most people would say, I guess that means I'm not going to go ahead and have a campaign because no one else is going to be around to do it. The person who's so inclined as to solo game or solo war game would say, forget it. I'm better off doing it by myself because I can go ahead and do this and not have to worry about anyone else. I don't have to have any conflict as a result of other people not showing up or being unreliable. I can just go ahead and do this on my own and say, I'm doing this. I don't have to worry about someone saying, I don't want to do that skill. I don't want to do that time period. I don't want to do fantasy. I don't want to do sci-fi. I don't want to do whatever. You pick it, you do it, and you're doing it by yourself. So therefore, whenever you're going to be in the mood or willing or able to game or participate in the campaign, you're going to do that. It's not contingent on anyone else doing anything with it. So that's point number one. Not only does it lend to a campaign, which takes a lot longer and has the hazards of opponents not being as reliable, but you can do it at your own leisure. So let's say you have, I don't know, half an hour after work before dinner. You can spend that half an hour thinking about your solo wargaming. And solo wargaming doesn't have to be a campaign. It does lend itself to the campaign, but I'm not saying it's only the campaign. And I'll talk a little bit about some other ways you can solo wargame that are not campaigns. But you have that half an hour, you can think, well, I'm going to use that to think about my army. What's my army going to be like? What's the purpose of the next solo game I'm going to play? How is it going to be? And what am I going to do? You can think about your wargaming diary, which they talk about, talks about a lot in here, that it's important to chronicle what you do because you need to say, oh, well, the troops did this and they did that and they did this. It's kind of like keeping a scrapbook of your gaming, which is really cool because if you're doing one-off games or even a campaign with buddies, you're going to spend more time playing, which is awesome, but you're not going to be able to remember it as much. Chronicling that is hard, and it's one thing I've learned in playing Black Powder with Adrian and Cord and running Black Powder events. As much as I love playing it, I have a blast playing these games with them. It's hard for me to remember it. So when it comes time to talk about it on the podcast or blog it or whatever, I find myself thinking, well, if I spend more time playing, that means I spent less time writing down what happened, less time chronicling what happened. So I don't really remember what happened. And if I spend more time keeping notes, then the game takes longer to play. Or I'm not actually playing as much, and maybe we're not actually finishing. And nothing's worse than playing a game with someone who's taken forever to do their turn. It makes me really mad, and I think it makes a lot of other people really mad. If you're playing a game by yourself, you don't have to worry about it. You can take as long as you want to think about your moves and what you're going to do and to chronicle it and do all that kind of stuff. Which brings us into the third great reason to solo wargame. You view the tabletop battle not as the end-all and be-all, but as a culmination of all your efforts. So whether you're doing a campaign or whether you're doing one-off, the time you spend thinking about it, the time you spend learning about the tactics and the history of the era and of the conflict that you're doing and reading about and researching, scrapbooking and all that kind of stuff, that's all part of your wargaming. And it all leads up to, it all builds up to that eruption of the actual battle. When you put those figures, you put those print and play models and terrain and everything on your playing space and you start moving stuff around and rolling dice and all that, that is the final result of all your efforts and all the time and all the strategy you did and everything you did to bring together to construct this final product, this tabletop battle. It's a reward. Anyone who's painted minis knows, if you keep on painting the same kind of stuff, yeah, you'll get it done quickly, but you're going to get bored. There's only so many riflemen you can paint, only so many space marines you can paint, before you say, I really don't want to paint any more of whatever this rank and file person is. So you're going to reward yourself, you're going to break it up, maybe you're going to paint some cavalry, maybe you're going to paint a tank, maybe you're going to paint something different, make some terrain, but you need to break it up, you need to reward yourself for all that other stuff you did. And in solo wargaming, your reward is a tabletop battle. And then this kind of goes back into the whole gaming at your leisure, because let's say if you're playing a game with other people, you probably only have a set amount of time to play. Maybe you have 2 or 4 hours, and then Johnny so-and-so has to go to work, or Ed so-and-so has another commitment. So then you have to build in the time to not only prep the table and put stuff out and play, but then to break it all down. If you're gaming by yourself, and if you're viewing the tabletop battle as a culmination of everything, your supreme reward, you want to make it last as long as possible, as long as you're going to have fun. And if you're playing by yourself, you're able to set it up and leave it. If you have a gaming room, you have a garage or basement or some space where you're able to game and leave it out, you're golden, because you're playing by yourself, you're putting the stuff out there, and you can take however long you need to think about this and that. You don't have to worry about rushing to clean up in an hour or 2 hours or however long. You can leave it out over a couple days, a week, months, whatever the case happens to be. And you can never, ever do that if you're gaming with somebody else. Another great reason to solo wargame is that you are unrestricted by another person's views and thoughts. So whether that's rules interpretations, whether that's changing how the rules are, whether that's, like I mentioned before, picking a time period, picking a conflict, picking a rule set, none of that matters. You are the arbiter. You can choose all that kind of stuff, and you don't have to say, well, I really want to do 6 mil ancient Romans, but Dave and Sally, they only want to do 15 millimeter Flames of War. Well, if you really want to do ancient Romans, and they really want to do Flames of War, and who's going to give in first? And if you give in, or if they give in, whoever gives in is not going to be really happy. But if you're gaming by yourself, you can say, I want to do 6 mil ancient Romans, and I'm going to do 6 mil ancient Romans. So you do 6 mil ancient Romans, and you use whatever rule set you want, DBA, Warhammer, Ancients, or you're going to go ahead and use Hail Caesar, or whatever the rule set happens to be, and you do it, and it's making you happy, because you are the only person you have to worry about satisfying. You don't have to worry about satisfying anyone else in the game group, because you are the game group, which is very important. And maybe it sounds kind of selfish. I'm not saying to solo game all the time, but I can see real value in this. And one final great reason to solo wargame ties into something that Featherstone had been leaning towards later on in his career, which is to use wargaming as a chance to test military strategies and to educate people in a military setting. Wargaming can be a fantastic way for the leaders of today's and tomorrow's militaries to learn from past mistakes and prepare for the future and thereby save lives. I know that might sound like, oh my god, I'm going to move my model soldiers around the table and that's going to cause us to save 400 soldiers, and how preposterous does that sound? Well, I don't mean it literally like that. And of course, if it's you and me and we're just hanging out in the game store or playing in our basements by ourselves, it's not going to have the same impact as someone at a military war college is going to have. But we can still learn. We can still be our own military historians. We can test theories on alternate strategies of the historical battles. Maybe we think, you know, if I was in Teutoburg Forest, I would have done this differently. Or over in Gettysburg, that was just stupid. Who would do Pickett's Charge? Or the Charge of the Light Brigade? Or who would do whatever? Sekigahara? Or you pick the battle, even if it's a fake battle, one that you played before with a buddy, maybe you want to try something differently. And you remember how it was all set up and stuff? You can solo game that and set it up yourself and try a different theory. Well, if we do this instead of that, then maybe this equals success. Whereas that equals wah-wah failure. It's something worth trying. And this goes back into the value of solo gaming for campaigns. Because take a historical campaign. I don't know. Let's just pick one. Hitler's invasion of Russia, or Napoleon's invasion of Russia, really. You can read up and learn what they had done and then think, well, you know, I wonder if they had done this, maybe they would have had more success, or maybe they would have had less. And so you think, well, try this. So then in your campaign, you build up a campaign to represent that, and you change stuff just enough so you can try out your theories. And then when you go to play in the actual battles, maybe you'll be able to test a little bit more and attack with the right flank instead of the left, or put your tanks in the middle, or whatever. And just try some different theories. And if that doesn't work how you thought, try a different one. And even if it does, maybe you want to test it again and again and again, because you want to prove that it happened. So you can get great satisfaction out of doing that. And this is something you would probably never be able to do playing with an opponent. So that's why I think it's not only awesome that Featherstone talks about all this, I see real value in here. I think that solo wargaming is going to be a new thing for me. Yeah, I love gaming with my buddies. I love going to the game store and hanging out and playing games. I love the fact that now that I have a house and a space in which we can game, that my buddies can come here, we can have a good time here, we can play games, whatever, but also that I can game on my own. And I'm thinking, very seriously in fact, that I'm going to take my Dead Hampton campaign, and in addition to playing it with my buddies when we play, although we're going to be doing some other campaigning, which I'll talk about just briefly in a moment, but I think in addition to that, that my focus is going to shift from it being a multiplayer event to it being a single player event, which is to say, I am going to solo wargame the Dead Hampton Revolution. And really, when I think about it, it makes sense, because like I talked about the great reasons to solo wargame, they all fit. Plus, I have all the material here. I have Excel sheets that covers stuff. It makes sense for me to campaign the Dead Hampton campaign, the Dead Hampton Revolution, by myself. It makes perfect sense for me. That's not to say it would make perfect sense for you. Now I just want to talk a little bit briefly, ever so briefly, about two things. First of all, I mentioned mere moments ago that there's this other campaign that we're going to be doing. And Adam of the Fencing Frog blog has generously agreed to run a Maurice campaign for us. So Adrian, Court, myself, and Adam, we're all going to be playing in the campaign, and Adam's going to be running it. I think I'm going to be hosting for us to play here in my home, which will be fantastic. So that'll be a chance for us to play a campaign with other people and do stuff. So I think that the guys will be more accepting of me focusing my Dead Hampton campaign into a solo wargaming adventure. Although, if they want to play, and they bought stuff for it, so I don't want to say, we're not playing now, because that's just mean, is really what it is. But we'll still do that. I'll have two parallel versions of it. I'll make separate copies of the files and put them on Dropbox or whatever the case happens to be. Not a problem. And the other thing is that, and this is really a great reason to buy this book, Solo Wargaming. I have to say, I got it through my work, through the library. I had to get it from a local university that happened to have it. But it covers ways that you can have blinds, so to speak, so that you don't know all. You may not know where all the armies are in that campaign. You may not know where all the troops are on the table. It uses things like hidden deployments and chance cards and having loved ones make some decisions for you and move stuff around and shuffle cards and stuff. There are things like chance cards that determine when random events happen. There are really cool movement system that uses matchboxes. And maybe not so common now when people, at least here in the United States, smoke less. But you take a bunch of matchboxes and you adhere them together so that you have, I think it's like 6 wide and 6 tall, and you basically make a chest of drawers out of matchboxes. And anyone who's seen or uses a matchbox knows you can make the box come out either side. And you put slips of paper in that represent your units and the opponent's units. And by opponent, I mean yourself, but the other nation, the other army. And they correspond to areas on a map. And the map size happens to have the same number of hexes or squares as, you guessed it, as the matchbox dresser thingy mabob, chest of things. And so each matchbox corresponds to a hex, and when the slips of paper that correspond to the units get together, that means you're going to have a battle of some sort. It's a really cool idea. It's one way to move stuff around and put things in and have hidden deployment and never really know when stuff's going to correspond. So that way you don't have to worry about having an umpire for your own solo war game. You can do all sorts of really cool different things like that. Use deck cards or just tons of different stuff. And Featherstone spends a lot of time talking about that in the book. I have to say that I've read the book on, I guess I'm 80%, 85% through the book. It's really, really interesting. I don't think everything applies to me. But one cool thing is that the copy I'm using is a first edition, I believe. But there's an updated version that has changes made, improvements really, for modern solo wargaming. Things like, instead of using a war diary, maybe you're going to blog about it, that kind of stuff, and new ways to keep track of stuff, maybe spreadsheets and all that sort of stuff. There's an updated version that you can purchase on Amazon. We will have a link in the show notes. I want to say the link will be an affiliate link, and what that means is that if you click on the link, and hopefully you'll buy the book, I think it's $19.95, It won't cost you any extra money. Cost you nothing extra. You just pay the $19.95 plus shipping if applicable. And then Amazon gives us some money out of Amazon's pocket to thank us for bringing a new customer to them. So, like I said, it costs you nothing, but allows us to keep this podcast going. And it's a cool way for us to talk about and promote products that we think are awesome, that might be of use and interest to you, that you can then purchase and make use of, where you help us out, but it doesn't take any money out of your own pocket, which I love. So I really think you should check out Solo Wargaming by Donald Featherstone. Like I said, we'll have a link to the Amazon product page in our show notes, wargamingforums.com/WR88, and hope you'll check that out and pick it up, or get in touch with your local library and see if they can get you a copy so you can read through before you purchase. Like I said in the beginning, I picked this up and I was like, oh, it's a Featherstone. I haven't read a whole lot of Featherstone, but I thought I should read some more Featherstone. And Solo Wargaming, that kind of sounds interesting, I guess, but I wasn't really sold on it in the beginning. And then I started reading, and the first chapter is like why you should solo wargame. And I'm reading, I'm thinking, these are all pretty good reasons. And then I'm reading more and more, and it has some rules that you could use and ways to make it so you don't know everything. An awesome cool way that it suggests to solo wargame is, it says, well, maybe you're sick, right? Well, if you're sick, you can't play with the buddy, and you're going to be on a limited space. So it has some cool rules for you to play basically on, like, a TV dinner tray. So you can do a little wargaming on your TV dinner tray when you're stuck in bed and you're sick because you feel like crap. I think that's awesome. If you have the energy to wargame but you can't get out of bed, why the heck not? Don't wait on a buddy, and don't get someone else sick, but you can still have your fun. So I think that's really, really cool. And, I just think it's awesome. So I'm actually looking forward to picking this up for myself. And I've mentioned Amazon, but you can get it from fantastic independent bookstores all over the place. You can get it from wonderful used bookshops and independent stockists. Just all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I'm suggesting Amazon because, well, we have it in an affiliate link. But if you know of a great bookstore near you, please go ahead, give them the money and buy it there. It might not be at the same price, but that's okay because it is worth it, and it's worth you spending the time and supporting them. Absolutely, I very strongly suggest that you do that, and I won't take any offense to it. So it's definitely worth you going ahead and just picking up a copy, however that you can do it. So be sure to look for, that's right, Donald Featherstone's Solo Wargaming. You want to pick it up, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. And it's really cool. One other suggestion I have for you, if you don't have a great independent bookstore near you, you might want to check out onmilitarymatters.com, which is a great bookstore. It's online, and they have a physical location, I think, down in Pennsylvania. I'm probably wrong, in which case I apologize. I am wrong. It's in New Jersey. I'm so sorry, guys. But On Military Matters is fantastic. I have some stuff that's come from them. I've talked about The Secrets of Wargame Design by Wally Simon, which Russ Lockwood has done, and Russ is affiliated with them, and they just have great, great stuff. So check them out too. We get nothing out of this. We have no affiliate relationship with them whatsoever, but they're definitely worth checking into. And if they don't have this in stock, they can get you a copy, and they can get, I would imagine, the original printing of it, or they can get the updated version. I would suggest the updated unless you really, really want like a first printing Featherstone, but I would suggest the updated version just because it has all the cool new stuff that covers modern day gaming in it. Well, this is normally been about when I would cut the episode off, but I have two more things I want to talk about. I'll get to them quickly, I promise. Now, big announcement. We had a couple episodes of Wargaming Recon that were focused on Total Confusion. Total Confusion, I'm not going to really get into, but it's a great gaming convention that happens in February down in Mansfield, Massachusetts, and we had two wonderful episodes that covered it. Episode 86 was titled Angela, Total Con's Promotional Director, which was kind of a, hey, Total Con's coming soon, you need to go, and this is why, it's going to be really, really, really awesome, and blah, blah, blah. Go have fun! So we talked with Angela and talked with her the year before to talk about TotalCon 26, and this was TotalCon 27, and I love talking with Angela. She's one of my favorite con people. I just have so much fun. And then we had our Mammoth episode, which was, I think, the second longest Wargaming Recon in the history of Wargaming Recon, going all the way back to 2006, which was episode 87, titled TotalCon 27. So we had a great milestone with these two episodes. Combined, we had more than 500 downloads. And what's really cool about this is that we were short of the 500 downloads. We were like 490, 495 maybe. So I went to social media and I said, please help us get to 500 downloads. And I, you know, looked at our stats and I compiled all the stats and put it into Excel and I made a little chart and color coded it and did stuff and I put the picture of the chart up. I said, please help us. And put that out. And wouldn't you know it, it took off like wildfire. We had people all over the place saying, oh, well, they want to do this. Let's help Wargaming Recon get the downloads they need. And as of the time of recording this, 348 people saw the posting on Facebook, and people heeded it. They downloaded those episodes, and after all was said and done in, oh geez, matter of hours, not even like two or three, I think it was like an hour and a half maybe, surpassed the 500 download mark. I think we got up to 510 downloads, and I'm sure it's way past this by the time that you're listening to this episode. But in thanks for that, we promised that we were going to pick another classic episode from our vault, spruce it up like we did with episode 1, and then release it in the near future. If you're not familiar, we took the very, very first episode of what is now known as Wargaming Recon, but at the time was called the CWF Game Discussions Podcast, way back in 2006, and we took that very first episode, as short as it was, and took it and edited it and spruced it up and made it neat and made real show notes for it in our current format and put it and released it to the world. And when we did that, something awesome happened. The very first episode, when it went out way back in 2006, had something like 10 people who listened to it, 10 downloads, something like that. Well, in the time since then, nothing really happened with it, because who wants to listen to an episode from 2006? A few people had listened to it, but not a whole lot. But some people had listened to it. Well, in the time since then, we said, well, let's go ahead and spruce it up, and we'll re-release it, and then we did that. And we were very surprised. I was very surprised by the reaction to it, and thought, well, this is an old episode, and I don't really know who's going to want to go ahead and listen to it, because, well, it's old. But we'll go ahead and we'll do it and we'll see what happens. So we did it, and then 169 people have downloaded the episode as of the time that I'm recording this, which is March 2013. 169, which is basically really 169 times greater than the number of people who listened to it when it first went out in 2006. Amazing, right? So we promised, going back to the beginning here, promised that if we could break, with your help, if we could get to, not even break, but if we could get to 500 downloads for our TotalCon coverage for this year, which was episodes 86 and 87, we'd pick another classic episode, spruce it up, and release it in the near future. Well, you guys did it. We went to and went past 500 downloads for episodes 86 and 87, and I am delighted to tell you that another classic episode has been chosen. It will be spruced up and will be released in the near future. The episode that we chose is the 23rd episode that was released for what is now known as Wargaming Recon, and at the time it was called the CWF Game Discussions Podcast or CWF Gamecast, something like that. I can't remember all the way back then. It's too many name changes. But we've taken the 23rd episode and it's going to be spruced up. That episode covered a wrap-up of things in December 2007. It covered some suggestions for what to look for in a case for collectible minis. It's not a long episode. It's about half hour long, But it was released on December 27th, 2007. And as promised, we're going to spruce it up. We'll edit it, make it sound pretty, and make it worthy of you to spend some time to. And we're hoping to, little by little, go back into the vault and pick episodes. And eventually, someday, all those old episodes we made to sound really cool and have the cool Wargaming Recon stuff on it and have maybe a little intro for me saying, "Hello, this is Jonathan J. Reinhardt for Wargaming Recon, and you're listening to a classic episode from The Vault. And in this episode, blah, 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 blah." So that's the hope, that all those old classic episodes will be covered. And the next episode we're doing it for, as thanks to you for the help you gave to not only reach, but to beat 500 downloads for our TotalCon coverage for 2013, which was episodes 86 and 87. Is to release and spruce up and all that cool stuff, episode 23. So we'll get that going and get that put out into the feed and all that kind of stuff, and you'll be able to get that in the near future. And then lastly, and very importantly, we have an announcement we want to make. It's time again for you to help out with a charity. This is the third annual Wayne Foundation Charity RPG Bundle. It will be on sale March 17th through March 31st, 2013, exclusively through DriveThruRPG. This bundle will be offering over $180 worth of RPG products, fiction, and artwork. It'll cost you only $25. Every single cent of profit made from the sale of this bundle goes directly to the Wayne Foundation, which is a 501c charitable organization. Now, the Wayne Foundation is committed to spreading awareness of commercial sexual exploitation of children and building a rehabilitation facility for victims of domestic minor sexual trafficking. They're working hard to get child sex workers the help they deserve to live normal lives. And there's tons of different products that you're going to be getting for your $25. It's constantly being updated, so by the time you listen to this, it's going to be most likely updated with more products, and maybe by the time you listen to it, if it's 2014 or 2015, it'll be the 4th or 5th or 100th, whatever, annual Wayne Foundation Charity RPG Bundle. I have to give major props to Ben Gerber, owner of Troll in the Corner and the Troll in the Corner Podcast Network, because he's been heading this up every year for the past two years and this year. And it's something he's passionate about. He has a lot of product that's going to be in it. And we're going to be getting in touch with him to see what he thinks about us adding some Wargaming Recon episodes to it if we can, and some other products that we're working on. See if we can get those in. And yeah, you can download the episodes for free from our site. And yeah, you can get them for free from Wargame Vault and all that kind of stuff. And it's not going to be product that you would normally pay for, but just enhance the value of their bundle. And hopefully he'll say yes. And hopefully by the time you listen to this, you will have already purchased it. We bought last year and loved it. It's great. And hope you will participate this year. It's a wonderful way to get some cool gaming products, but more importantly, to help fight child sexual exploitation and help these child sex workers to get the help that they not only deserve, but that they need. So this has been an episode where I've done a lot of asking you for help. I've asked you to help with the Higgins Armory, to help save it. I've told you about International Tabletop Day and asked you to go and have some fun at a great event at the local gaming store near you. I suggested you buy Donald Featherstone's Solo Wargaming, and I thanked you and told you that you're going to have another episode to download, an episode from The Vault, episode 23, be coming out sometime in the near future. And now I'm telling you, please, I'm pleading with you, really, please help out, buy the Wayne Foundation Charity RPG Bundle. $25, and you're going to get a lot of great product, but most importantly, you're going to help to battle child sex workers, to get them out of that and save them. That's what it is, saving the kids. So with your help, this can and will happen, and we'll have information. That's right, you guessed it. I feel like I've been talking about this a lot, but you guessed it. The show notes to our blog. You want to head on over to wargamingforums.com/WR88. That's right, wargamingforums.com/WR88. It's going to have links to everything we talked about in this episode of Wargaming Recon. Links to stuff on the Higgins and everything. So you'll be able to go ahead and buy, the Wayne Foundation Charity RPG Bundle, or to pick up your copy of Donald Featherstone Solo Wargaming with our affiliate link and all sorts of cool things. Well, that has been another episode of Wargaming Recon. I thank you yet again for listening to this episode and welcoming me into your homes and your lives, taking the time out of your busy schedules to listen to another episode. This has been episode, 88, Save the Higgins Armory. You know the drill. We're going to have promos here for the other shows on the Troll in the Corner podcast network, because if you like Wargaming Recon, if you love Wargaming Recon, chances are you like some of the other shows on the Troll in the Corner podcast network, such as my other show, Geeks Explicitly, in which I tackle all sorts of different things relating to geek life. Or maybe you're going to love Ben's two shows, Indie Talks, and his other show, Growing Geeks, which he does with the wonderful Tristan Tarwater. Or maybe, just maybe, you're going to love Monsters of the Shattered World, done by Mr. Brent Newell, which has just started its second season, comes out once a month. We'll have all the real promos in a moment. You'll be hearing those. And then, of course, the credits would remind you yet again how you can get in touch with us here, such as going to our show notes, leaving a comment, sending an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com, sending us a voicemail on that fantastic phone number, all those cool different ways. You know about it all, but they'll be in the credits yet again. So, as always, I just want to thank you one last time for listening to this episode. And don't forget, you know the drill. I've been saying this since 2006. Keep on gaming! Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. If you enjoy Wargaming Recon, you might enjoy some of the other shows on the network. So here's the lineup. Every Wednesday is a new episode of Indie Talks with Ben Gerber. Ben is the owner of Troll ITC, and on Indie Talks, he covers independent games, movies, television, he performs interviews with guests, gives reviews, and much more. He claims it's a bi-monthly podcast, but actually, you can get a new episode every Wednesday. Geeks Explicitly is a show I co-host with my buddy Drew McCarthy. We release new episodes every Thursday covering all aspects of geek life. Look for reviews, interviews, and much more. Of course, Wargaming Recon is a bi-monthly historical and New England gaming podcast featuring interviews, reviews, convention coverage, giveaways, and much more. Then, Gamer Tunes, another show I do, is a bi-monthly gaming music podcast where you can find music to play in your games or when you're just chilling with your gaming buddies. All music on the show is either free, freely available via the Creative Commons, or artists have given me permission to play it. You can check Gamer Tunes twice a month. Finally, Monsters of the Shattered World is a monthly podcast hosted by Brent Newhall. Brent is one of the other editors at trollitc.com. Monsters of the Shattered World is a story-type podcast just like the old Sherlock Holmes radio. If you like any of these, or you just want to see what's going on, please head over to trollitc.com. Be sure to click on the Troll in the Corner podcast network logo.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly, new episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
Hi, this is Tristan.
And this is Ben.
And this is Growing Geeks, a podcast where we talk about parenting as geeks
and use our skills to raise the next generation of awesome people.
We all started out as a ball of lightning. And we'll all end up as ammonium chlorine. And somewhere in between we'll rule the world. Yeah, somewhere in
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
If you heard it and you do like it, good. If you don't like it, what I'm supposed to do.